The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody. Furthermore, the pot jokes found throughout this week's episode, recorded on April 20th, do not represent the views or habits of Volta Midnight Incorporated or Marcus Schwimmer specifically. They are, in addition, not super funny.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Weibar.
This is Rachel Polk.
We have a little pre-podcast message for you.
Sorry to bug you beforehand.
Really quickly, we just forgot to mention in this week's episode that Vault of Midnight is running a very special event right now called Civil War.
Civil War?
That is not, definitely, we didn't get permission from anyone to use that name at all.
What is this Civil War?
Well, what about Civolt War? What do you think?
I don't think that that should be a thing.
All right, nevertheless, you can visit your Vault of Midnight of your choice in Ann Arbor, Michigan or in Grand Rapids until May 6th and help that shop win the Civolt War.
Don't.
I can't call it that?
No, it's just the Civil War.
So there's a movie coming out called Civil War. You might have heard of it. It's kind of a big deal. And from now until May 6th, stop by the Vault of Midnight of your choice, and you can make a charitable donation to some really good causes, and whichever shop raises the most money wins the Civolt War.
The Civil War.
Excuse me. In Ann Arbor, we're donating all of our proceeds to 826 Michigan, and in Grand Rapids, we're donating to the Grand Rapids Children's Museum.
This sounds super cool.
It is super cool, and even more cool is that whichever shop raises the most money is going to have a really huge sale to celebrate.
So who's who?
Oh, Ann Arbor is Captain America, and Grand Rapids is Tony Stark. And you can follow all of our wacky goings on as we compete for your affections in the Civil War on our different social media accounts.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah?
Does this make Vault of Midnight Detroit, like, Spider-Man?
I think Vault of Midnight Detroit is like Spider-Man. That's a very good call.
Okay.
So, thank you. Sorry to interrupt before the podcast starts. You can find out more information at vaultofmidnight.com/events to learn more about Civil War, Vault of Midnight style.
You can totally also visit the Vault of Midnight Facebook page.
For more info?
For more info.
All right, now it's back to our regularly scheduled thing.
Okay, we'll leave you alone now.
I'm really sorry about all the pot jokes. Marcus, are you ready?
Yeah, man.
Curtis, are you ready?
Fucking A, dude.
All right, man. Welcome to Super Skull, Wolf Midnight's weekly new Comic Day audio digest. My name is Nick, the old witch Weibar, and I work at Vault of Midnight. I'm here with the macabre Marcus Schwimmer.
How we doing?
So good, man. Recording on 4/20, on April 20th right now.
Wait a second. We're recording this, man?
So we get to use stupid high voices all day.
Oh, man.
Wait, Marcus, let me hear yours.
No, I have a.
No, it's the best. Please.
No, I'm good. Thank
please.
You.
Can
just
I get...
yeah, man.
Oh, perfect. The other voice that you hear is the Call of Cthulhu Sullivan.
That's me.
Curtis Sullivan mashed up with Cthulhu.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why it took so long to do that.
I don't either.
That seems like a gimme.
It does. I was searching for horror names that began with C.
Why were you searching for horror names?
I was just thinking of like some nicknames for us today for our Taser segment.
It's because our Taser segment's focused on EC Comics and Will Gaines.
Yeah.
That's and so you got
and they did like horror comics and stuff.
You got horror on the mind.
Yeah, I do.
You guys ready to do this thing?
Yeah.
I feel ready. I heard a rumor. Mm-hmm. That Marcus, you got a DNA test.
I did last, maybe not last episode, but a couple episodes before.
Is this because of your
Viking,
your crippling diseases?
Well,
is this in aid of science and medicine?
I'm glad we're bringing that up. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Well, so I have always, there's always been this story in my family about how we have Jewish heritage.
Mm.
But like, it's always been a little wishy-washy on if that's true or not, and where it comes from. You know, like stories like, oh, I remember being a kid and hearing my grandmother say, you know, but there was never any definitive. So my parents and I got this DNA test done through.
Can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
How do you get it? When they do a DNA test, is it like an ice sample and it's like a core check? Like, how do they?
You spit into a tube and mail it in.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah,
okay.
Super easy.
Really?
Yeah. You have to fill. It takes forever because it's actually like a pretty notable amount of
saliva
you must produce. But yeah. So I sent it in. My sister got it for me and my parents for Christmas. And we sent it in soon after. And I've received the results.
What?
And I have been very excited about this because I want so badly to be proven that I have Scandinavian heritage.
Yeah.
Because I've been in a big Viking kick lately.
How Jewish are you?
None.
You got, okay.
Zero.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually surprising no one, but it disproves the family myth.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe a little Scandinavian, a little Viking.
So the update, the report changes as they run your test for longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first got the report back, I was like 5% Scandinavian.
Where are we at today?
And I was like, yes, this is awesome.
Are you getting more Viking by the day?
I'm getting less Viking by the day. Currently, I'm at 1% Scandinavian, but in a weird twist of fate, originally, my test had me completely Northwestern European, 100%. As of the last few days, 2.8% Italian.
Really?
I've never heard anything about any Italian heritage in my family whatsoever, either side.
Mm.
So, super fascinating. Also,
it's really tough to talk about this without just making a bunch of stereotype jokes.
That's right.
I'm finding it really hard to find anything funny to say about
this. Let me make a real easy one for you. The DNA will also tell you your percentage of Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we can talk about Neanderthals, right?
How much of the Neanderthal gene you have.
And you have?
33% more than the average human, the midway mark.
Outstanding.
Yeah, but let me tell you the best part of this whole thing. Ready for this?
I am ready.
I have a 73% chance of not losing my hair until past the age of 50.
You slut.
You feeling good about that?
I'm feeling great about that.
Yeah, man.
That's a cool little tidbit.
That is.
Well, it breaks down all these health things for you and just like percentages about eye color diseases that you could get.
Yeah.
But yeah, this head of hair is staying.
So what's the bulk of what you are?
I am 54% French-German mix. Which does match what I've been told.
That explains your love of cheese.
Well, it explains my love of kraut, yes, but sauerkraut. But yeah.
Kraut of the sour variety.
But interestingly enough, 18.1% British and Irish, and that is something that I did not know either. I've never heard anything about any British or Irish heritage.
Okay.
So very interesting. I highly recommend everyone does this.
I hope that's interesting for anyone
that's
listening right
maybe
now.
Maybe not. I'm really
about
bummed.
About Marcus's heritage.
Yeah, I'm really bummed I'm not more Scandinavian.
If you would have asked Steve if you were Scandinavian, you could have just like not done any of this and be like, hey, Steve, am I a Viking? And he would have told you no.
No. Absolutely not.
But yeah, I really highly, it's super interesting. I recommend everyone does it. I'm super pumped I'm not going to lose my hair.
Bang.
All right.
Marcus is not losing his hair, and he's got some Irish and some Italian surprising us.
Breaking
all.
News. There you go.
Whatever.
Nice.
Thanks,
Happy
dudes.
Christmas, Marcus.
You guys want to move into the news?
Let's do it.
In other breaking news,
uh-huh.
I think we just have to talk about the fact that Free Comic Book Day is right around the corner.
It's imminent.
What?
Looming. Large.
What is Free Comic Book Day?
Publishers and distributors and retailers team up throughout the entire comic industry to provide thousands, millions even, of people with free comic books.
All over planet Earth and some parts of space,
I think,
if I'm not mistaken.
There's a colony on the moon?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is, we're going to be doing Free Comic Book Day at all three Vaults of Midnight.
Now with three Vaults of Midnight.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, we have a super limited edition t-shirt that we put together, that Carolyn Nowak put together.
Yes.
Carolyn Nowak, author or illustrator of Run of Lumberjanes.
That's correct.
Yeah, locally in Arborite.
We got some more of her comics in the shop today, too. Her self-published, awesome, funny books.
She's one of our favorite comic creators. She is extremely good at her job. And the t-shirt is maybe the best t-shirt we've ever made. Maybe.
It's incredibly dope.
It's incredibly good.
I'm so in love with this dude.
I'm so in love with it.
It's important to mention that it is ultra limited a dish.
Oh yeah, you can only get it by going to Free Comic Book Day at Vault of Midnight. But we like, can we put a picture of it on the website on the Super Skull website?
We will do that.
Rachel, can we do that?
There's only just a handful of shirts per Vault of Midnight,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, so you gotta peep this thing out because I just love it so much. So that's Free Comic Book Day. I think we're gonna do a taser on the history of Free Comic Book Day The week that we're leading up to
it. I think that sounds like a good idea.
And we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with that, which is actually a pretty insane thing that it happens at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens every year like clockwork, and it's one of our biggest days of the year.
It just keeps getting bigger every year.
Yeah. Yep. And now we're at 3 Volts of Midnight, which makes me feel like I'm going to prematurely lose a good chunk of my hair, regardless of my DNA results.
I'm saying. I'm less stressed out than I thought I would be, but just give it a week, and I'm sure I'll be panicking more.
We also have some more DC Rebirth news. Curtis.
Yes.
With the weekly DC Rebirth update.
I'm like a broken record with this DC Rebirth.
What is going on with DC Rebirth?
All right, I'm just going to say a few things. Some more announcements. They're coming hot and furious. Mm-hmm. Batgirl number one is Hope Larson and Raphael Albuquerque, which I thought Marcus would be juiced
super
for.
Pumped, yeah.
It's continuing the Burnside stuff. That's in June. Titans number one, written by Vault of Midnight favorite Dan Abnett.
Mm-hmm.
And art by Brett Booth, who I could, well, you know, we'll see.
Dan Abnett.
Gene Yang Superman now has a name. His name is Kenan Kong, and he's from Shanghai.
The character's name is Kenan Kong. The name of the book is...
All New Superman.
Thank you.
Boing.
I went down the rabbit hole on this. All new.
All different.
I don't think that's right.
I'm just fucking saying words. What rabbit hole did you go down?
Well, just about like... The character, his name has had a couple different changes because he wanted to really make sure that he was Chinese, and the first name that he picked had like a Japanese sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, he comes from like an industrial part of China, which links to the Clark Kent origin story,
mm-hmm.
that he's kind of from the working class.
It's really cool.
Gene's put a ton of work. I feel like I can call him by his first name. I've met him once.
Your best friends.
Yeah,
sure.
We're best friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gene's put like a lot of work into this character. I'm really pumped for it.
Cool. Agreed. And we should say this, and we'll say it every week. May 25th is the DC Universe Rebirth issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's $2.99. It's 80 pages. DC claims it is not to be missed.
Okay.
That's this week in DC Rebirth.
Why do we keep talking about DC Rebirth every week, Curtis?
It's just a humongous deal. Like, DC's relaunching everything. They're taking their legacy titles back to their original numbering. Their Action Comics are in the 900s.
Yeah.
They're relaunching all the big ones.
And it's cool when we have, like, because we talk shit about DC pretty frequently. So any new kind of relaunch like this is an opportunity to see where we can take it with new creative teams and
yep.
new titles. And it's almost like a rebirth of sorts.
It is.
It's a new opportunity.
Yeah, and, you know, we
want DC to be good.
We want DC to be good.
I don't enjoy talking shit about DC.
No, absolutely not.
A little bit.
And this is a huge opportunity for us as a store. I mean, there's no denying that. But for fans love Batman number ones. They just do.
Oh, yeah.
That's just how it works. It's an easy place to jump in. We can sell them to 12-year-olds who have never read a Batman. It's we love it. Every 5-6 years, yeah, do this thing. Marvel, DC, both.
Number one selling comic last month, Batman number 50.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Batman's the shit.
So take that.
I got some Detroit Vault of Midnight news really quick.
Hit me.
I was there last night. They put all the glass in the front of the store.
You were there in the night with no one else around.
In the nighttime, alone.
Yeah.
I was testing all the light switches and stuff.
Did you lay down in the middle of it?
I didn't. It's a little dirty still. They're cleaning
it.
But I would have.
Mm-hmm.
The glass is up. We have doors.
Cool.
Vault of Midnight has doors. Big double doors.
Is the hidden door up yet?
The hidden door is up.
The oh my God, that's so exciting.
Yeah. And
so
it's hidden.
This is along one of the walls. There is a recessed door with no hinges.
The hinges are like inside.
Yeah.
And there's no frame.
You'll be able to tell looking at it that it's a door.
I was going
to
say you're giving away the location of the hidden door.
It's okay. It's okay.
We're going to put a giant piece of art over it so you really won't be able to see it. We got a bathroom in there. I went number one in the bathroom just to test it.
You took the first number one?
I did.
I am no kidding. I'm calling the first number two.
Okay. You're calling it now.
Yeah.
Here into the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I got bad news for you dudes as someone who used to work construction.
Oh, darn it. Somebody probably already did it.
That bathroom's been well used.
The only thing that matters is that I get in there before co-owner, co-founder of Vault of Midnight, Steve Fidale. That
right.
Nothing else matters except for that I shit in that toilet before he does. I can't stress that enough.
Yep. The shelving install starts on Monday.
Yep.
You dudes.
And then we're looking at a grand opening of May 2nd.
I've got a note here that says, fuck, only 10 days till open.
12 days. As of this recording.
I'm not doing math.
It's a Curtis 10.
Thank you.
Right.
And actually, in podcast land, time is an illusion. And who gives a shit how many
really
days?
Soon.
It's really soon. You can hear it in our voices. I'm so glad it's 420 so we can just take the edge off just all day long.
Yeah, man. Hold on.
Nice bong sound. That was awesome.
I was doing a bong number.
Let's do some big picks.
Word.
You know how when you're trying to find a good drug dealer,
uh-huh,
and there's so many assholes in the world, and they only want to meet at the Arby's that you like the least over on the east side of town. And they're late. And they're always late.
You got to sit in Arby's for like 45 minutes.
Or you got to hang out in like their driveway or their den for like much longer than you want to. You can think of us as a really sweet connect with the dude with the best drug dealer.
And when we say drugs, we just mean the marijuana.
The choicest of noogs. And he's also really punctual and like wears a tie and respects your time, which
absolutely,
I think is like really important.
No, it's we're on a schedule here.
You can think of us as the dudes that know a dude, but the dude is comics.
And there's no drugs.
How do you guys feel about that one that I just did?
I just hope none of my cadets listen to this goddamn podcast.
Yeah, get up on that mic.
Marcus didn't say anything.
Oh, shit.
Talk into the microphone.
Sorry. Let's do it. Let's pick some big picks. Woo!
Curtis, what was your big pick this week, my dude?
Dudes, it was not a Batman comic.
Can we call the big picks, can we call them sweet nugs?
Yes,
okay.
We can.
What was your sweet nug?
My sweet nug this week was the Batman Elseworlds collection. It's labeled Volume 1.
Okay.
Indicating that there'll be a Volume 2, I hope.
What's an Elseworld?
Elseworlds is, so dig this, in comic book companies like in DC, they have regular old DC, just called DC.
Mm-hmm.
Those are real stories that actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
They're real.
They're based on true stories, every
exactly.
single one of them.
Everything is real.
Yeah.
Then they have imaginary stories, which are like totally made up.
Yeah.
And then they have what's called Elseworlds,
mm-hmm.
which are stories that did actually happen, but like kind of in like another dimension.
Right. Still
so
happened. Nobody's
still
saying
happened.
They didn't happen.
They're not imaginary. They're real.
It's on another world.
Yes, in another plane of existence or another world.
Or sometimes in somebody's mind.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're totally real.
And these are all Elseworlds related to Batman.
Yes, the B-Man. So this thing collects a ton of books that are unavailable in any other format right now. You're going to have to dig through long boxes to find some of these bad boys. But they're conveniently condensed in this volume, which is huge, I might add. It's like 400 pages, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whale.
It looks big.
It's just super thick. I was reading it for like 4 hours, and I didn't finish it last night.
I'm seeing here that Batman Holy Terror is in there?
It is.
Wait, the Frank Miller Holy Terror?
No, totally different.
Oh, thank Christ.
I know. That's what I said. I was like, what is going on? This is a story about what if... So Batman's about to become a priest.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Wayne is. His parents are slain, so he's been training to become a priest his whole life. He lives in this world with like a totalitarian, sort of a Watchmen-esque government that controls information, controls the media.
Yeah.
He finds out that the state had his parents killed because they were subversives and not towing the party line, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
It is crazy and super heavy duty. There's like genetic experiments. Batman is a priest by day and Batman by night.
Cool.
It was super cool and really hardcore. I was like shocked. There's a lot of moments in it where I was like, I cannot believe you just did that. Awesome stuff. Marcus, there's a story called Batman, the Blue, the Gray, and the Bat.
Yeah.
So Colonel Bruce Wayne works for Lincoln.
Marcus's eyes just lit the fuck up.
And Abraham Lincoln sends Colonel Wayne, the Batman, to fetch all this awesome gold and silver to help fund the Union in the middle of the Civil War.
Yeah, I'll be reading that immediately.
It was completely badass.
Does he have, like, a musket? What does he use?
He's got two guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he also uses a rifle.
Oh.
Robin is an Indian, like Tonto style. It's incredibly dope.
Oh, my God. That sounds...
It's inked by this dude, Juan Luis Garcia Lopez,
mm-hmm.
who is this incredible old-timey badass. The art is outrageously good. So that was incredibly cool. There's a story called Robin 3000 in here, where Batman is slain by aliens. He actually martyrs himself to these alien invaders. And his Robin, Tom Wayne, nephew to Batman, takes the mantle and is fighting this alien invasion. It's got art by this guy named P. Craig Russell, which is like some Mobius shit.
Mm-hmm.
It totally freaking rules. There was crazy amounts of good stuff in here. There's a story where Bruce Wayne is Dr. Frankenstein, and he creates the Man-Bat,
mm-hmm.
who then is like, so it's like, you know, the Man Bat is Frankenstein. Bruce is Dr. Victor Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dope. And it just goes on and on. I mean, Batman teams up with Houdini, and they're like tracking
the
down...
rapper?
Yes.
Oh.
Houdini, the rapper.
I love Elseworlds. When you said Robin 3000, that was my first thought, too.
There you go.
It was Andre Benjamin matchup.
It is, totally. You're right. That would be great if they did that.
This shit sounds cool. This sounds like it's Batman unburdened by all of the continuity of Batman.
Yeah.
It's just Batman in weird situations and doing wacky stuff and switching the characters around, switching his time around.
Yeah, and all jokes aside, Elseworlds essentially was definitely this kind of umbrella imprint that DC did.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do it as much anymore. Where, yeah, creators are, you know, they pitch a wild idea and they can just do it. And they don't have any of these constraints because of, you know,
I love it.
Continuity.
Do you consider Earth 1 to be an Elseworld?
I don't think that is. I think Earth 1 is...
Well, now, so Elseworlds is an actual imprint.
Is it not?
And these are all books that actually fall under the DC...
Imprint of
actually,
Elseworlds.
Marcus.
Well, tell me more. So that's fascinating.
Yeah. I think Earth 1 is its own series. It's like that's its own umbrella label, the Earth 1.
Bring back Elseworlds imprint.
I'm saying, much fun.
I say do that. I'm sitting on a real good Batman Elseworlds story in brain, you guys. Oh, man. I can't even say it on the internet.
I'm saying, can you pitch it to DC?
Come on.
I'm going to pitch it to DC.
I think you should.
As I've been saying for years and haven't done yet.
No, you dude, this is a big old book. It was like $35, right?
Yeah.
But it is a monster. And I'm about halfway through it, and everything I read was completely badass.
Excellent.
I freaking dug it. And it's just got a ton of talent on the book. Howard Chaykin does a story back when Howard could draw.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, subjective, of course. I just hate him now. But back then, he was really good. So check it out, man, if you want to see Bruce Wayne and Houdini hunt down, like, Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
It's dope.
Can I talk about some other Batman news that I've heard about recently?
Please.
So there was a really great article on Slate that we're going to link to about the history of gay subtext in Batman cartoons and how important Batman was to a certain, you know, to kids when they were like trying to figure out their sexuality and like the signals that they found in Batman.
Ooh.
And things that you just like can't escape, but that went totally missed by most readers of the comic that are not looking for it.
Right.
But for the people that were looking for it.
Yeah.
And I also heard a really great interview on Bullseye with a dude that's just talking about a lot of this same stuff in the history of Batman and like the importance of comics for young folks. It was just very Batman-centric, and they both came out last week. So we'll link to both of those things in the show notes. And also this Slate review about the gay subtext of Robin specifically is like interspersed with a bunch of frames from that period that are impossibly hilarious. I highly recommend it. It was a really good read.
It's
interesting because you hear about this stuff with X-Men all the time in kind of relationship to connecting with gay culture.
Well, it's connecting to otherness in general with the X-Men.
Right.
And they talk about that a little bit.
That's interesting.
Batman
really
is like
Batman.
Specifically like... I can't do it as well as the gentleman who wrote this article, who I am absolutely going to credit, Glenn Weldon, who wrote about it on Slate.
Nice work.
Super fascinating. I just wanted to throw that out there. We will link to all of that stuff. Speaking of Batman.
Nice. So that was Batman Elseworlds Volume 1, you guys, was my big peak. Some other ill shit that I did read was the Four Kids Walk Into a Bank Number 1, which comes out next week, which is...
April 27th.
April 27th. Look for that. That's from Black Mass Studios. That's going to be hot shit. Some stuff that came out this week that I didn't get a chance to read that I'm dying to read. P-Man and Iron Fist, also known as Power Man and Iron Fist, number 3. Shaft, number 3. Both of those books are written by David Walker, one of my favorite writers right now. And the Criminal 10th Anniversary magazine size. Can't wait.
I loved that. I read that Criminal 10th Anniversary. It was really good.
Man. The Criminal always satisfies.
It really does.
I love that big old magazine.
That's the thing. Every time they come out with a magazine edition, I just want more magazine editions
of
everything.
So Criminal is an ongoing series, although we haven't seen kind of like a story arc of that book in a while, have we?
No, just there was a one-shot a year ago or
this
whatever.
Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, crime noir set in kind of contemporary times.
Yep.
And what they've been doing for the past few years is like, is it kind of annually-ish?
Yeah.
They put out a one-shot, which is just an oversized, usually like 80 pages or more, just a standalone story that kind of like ties in with characters from all over the criminal verse.
Yep.
And in addition to putting out just the standard cover, at a standard comic size comic, they put out a giant magazine cover, and it's always kind of, it looks like a comic from the era that really we're about to talk about soon. It's a, and this one is, what's it? It's, I don't have it in front of me.
Kung Fu Werewolf?
Kung Fu Werewolf.
Yeah.
And it's themed after that old, as if you had that old magazine sized comic.
I just look at like the Cap 75th anniversary they just did with Sam Wilson number 7.
Yeah.
Should have been magazine. Should have had the option for a magazine size. It would have been so cool.
But what about storage, Marcus?
Yeah, I don't really, I will find a solution.
Exactly.
Marcus?
Yep.
What was your nickname? Macabre. Right?
Well, I love how you said it with that accent.
Macabre Schwimmer.
I love it. That's great.
What was your sweet nug?
My sweet nug.
Crumble it for me.
Was The Fourth Planet by Chapter House Comics. So, dudes, I don't know if you know this about me, but I have a soft spot for Canadian-made comic books.
That's a weird thing to have a soft spot for.
Well, it really started with...
Was there any Canadian in your DNA? Did we find out?
Did they even check for that?
I don't know if they check for that.
Okay. Nobody wants that burden.
So it kind of really kicked off when I found, a couple years ago, I found a book, Nelvana of the Northern Lights. I've talked about it a couple times on the podcast. It's this really amazing female superhero character who was kind of the first. So after
the first.
The first major female comic book character. Mm-hmm. So after that, I started getting into Captain Canuck, mostly as a joke, but then I really developed quite the fondness for the character.
Mm-hmm.
He's also done by this Chapter House Comics, who puts out The Fourth Planet this week. This book is just some of the best and most interesting world building I've seen in a comic book for a very long time.
The cover is outrageously good.
Yeah, so essentially humans have been slaves for a long time. They've freed themselves and they've taken over a spaceship.
Or at least some of them have.
Yeah, some of them have. And they've been going around and collecting other human colonies, freeing them. And their spaceship is in disrepair. They find a planet that can inhabit human life. And kind of do a rough landing on that planet.
Yeah, they crash into that
bitch. Yeah. And there's some other species that inhabit this planet, and thus the comic begins.
And those other species have a very deep, very complicated relationship with each other.
Yeah.
They're at war with each other.
They're in a crusade, yeah.
Yeah, and each individual society has its own, like, it, and all in this one issue, you get a sense of all of this. Like,
wow.
Some very deep, like, the weird political conflicts happening within each one of these societies, much less the thing happening between the two of them.
And
sounds pretty massive in scope.
It's what you get is you get this sense that like there's this very complex planet and these two species who have been here for a long time are battling one another, and now we add the human element and they don't even connect in the first issue. Right? We're just seeing little vignettes from each species.
Uh-huh.
But each species looks totally different. They have very different cultures. One is like aristocratic, one is more tribal. What I really love about this book is the humans have a very Imperial Rome aesthetic to them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of this Roman space legion. It was phenomenal. And it, you know, coming out of this smaller press house, I really dig it. The writer for the book, Fred Kennedy, interestingly enough, is a pretty popular radio personality in Toronto, and moonlights in the evening as a comic book creator.
Well, it's the best time to moonlight.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. The artist Miko Masajic, and I apologize, I said that wrong, I'm sure, both Canadian, which I think is really great. So I really encourage anyone, check out this Chapter House Comics. They put out Captain Canuck, and they put out this Fourth Planet, and they got some other books in the works. Really great stuff.
I loved how much work they got done in that book. Setting up all these cultures and setting up all, but it without exposition. So it was all, we learned all of this stuff through actual characters that we got to know a little bit and how they related to each other.
Yeah.
It's not like, welcome to this world. Here's what's going on. Let's catch you up. It's all done very story organically.
I like that.
I got a real, like, I put this book down. I read it once last night, read it once this morning. I was like, man, I just want a video game in this world so bad.
You know, I'm going to bring up this, just it's boring, but I ordered this book. I almost didn't order this book, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the cover. I thought it was really great. I had to dig around a little bit on the internet, and I found an 8-page preview and read it, and that's what made me pull the trigger on this book. But we almost didn't get this book.
Right.
That was some boring retail talk.
No, but it's interesting because what did you have? So you're going through a giant magazine filled with stuff.
Yeah, 500 pages.
What do you, when you saw this, what did you have to go on before you ordered it 3 months in advance with no return ability?
Exactly. I got a postage stamp of the cover.
Literally.
And just text that you know, really loose, you know, like a ship crashes on a planet and some aliens.
Written by some fucking editor at Diamond, probably.
I've never heard of the creative team. And the publisher is very small, has one or two comic books. So, yeah, I mean, I spent a good half hour investigating this book.
And it's one of thousands of, it's surrounded by thousands of other books, and they all cost money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an absolute blast.
There you go.
I really
encourage people to check it out, and I encourage people to check out Captain Canuck if you ever get a chance. There's all new classic Captain Canuck, number one out this week.
Yeah.
Did you just say all new classic?
All new classic Captain Canuck.
Nice.
Yeah, very good.
I love an all new classic.
They're running two. They run like a modern a modern Captain Canuck, and then they run an all new classic, which is kind of like a...
It's like all old modern.
Well, it's just new comics done in the older style for their older readership, and then they have a modern Captain Canuck for their younger readership. It's really smart, actually.
Marcus does not think this is funny. This is fucking serious.
I just
all new classic is a stupid term.
It's amazing. And then if you were to check some other stuff out this week, Sam Wilson, Captain America, continues to be great in the development of Steve Rogers.
Nice.
Very, very good. Number 8 came out this week. Also, I read this book, Black Eyed Kids, from Aftershock, new little publishing
house. B-E-K.
Yeah, I read it right before bed, and it's a horror comic, and it gave me the heebie-jeebies a little bit.
All right.
It was a fun book, though. If you like horror comics, I recommend it.
Okay.
It's got a little bit of a like The Ring vibe going,
but
it's done very well. So I really enjoyed it.
This guy, Joe Pruitt, who's writing it, he's been around for a million billion years. He used to write for Caliber Comics. Way back in the 1996 when Vault of Midnight opened, we had lots of Joe Pruitt comics, and it's got a great cover by Francisco Francavilla.
It's a good horror book.
Nice.
If you're into Harrow County or Lock and Key, I would recommend you check this book out.
And it's only $1.99.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not a fan that's on the cover, but yeah. And those are my picks for the week. Really, if you are into like any kind of world exploring at all, I implore you to check out Fourth Planet. It is excellent.
Nice.
Cool.
Nick, what do you got for us this week, homie?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, man.
Yeah, hey.
Hold on a second.
The old witch, put your bong down.
Hold on. All right, you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
I think so, man.
I hurt my stomach doing that fake cough just now. My pick this week was, my nug was Department H.
Oh.
Or Depth, which I didn't get until I read the comic. So this is Matt Kent. Of Mind Management.
Oh.
And
Super Spy.
Thank you. Super Spy. Revolver.
He did a dope Star Wars book about Han Solo.
He did. Rebel Heist.
Rebel Heist.
It was about all the crew.
That was a
really good book.
Yeah.
Matt Kent, Two Sisters.
Yeah.
He's one of these dudes that did a lot of like small art house, smaller pressed.
Yep.
He was like Jeff Lemire for a long time.
He was.
He was like in your realm. Did I just kick you?
It's fine.
I just want to play footsie with you.
Later, man.
This was like in like the smaller graphic novelist realm of things. And then like Jeff Lemire, he has kind of broken into doing monthly stuff and a lot of creator-owned stuff.
Yeah.
And has taken to the form, like, really, really well.
I'm saying, I feel like this dude and Jeff Lemire, the two of them, are writing, like, 1 million comics.
I know, and for a long time, it just seemed impossible, because these dudes would come out with a graphic novel every few years,
yep.
And it was highfalutin and deep and complicated, and he was one of those types of graphic novelist, of which there are still, you know, a lot of those dudes,
mm-hmm.
And they've just seamlessly made the transition over to working for like the biggest comic publishers in the world putting out monthly work, and it's really, really
cool.
And
still doing their own stuff.
Still doing their own stuff.
Which is totally badass.
In addition to company stuff.
Yeah.
Like he did a Star Wars book, Matt Kent did. So this is written and drawn by Matt Kent and colored by his wife, Charlene Kent.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. It is the story of a murder.
Where does this murder occur?
At the bottom of the sea. So there's a deep sea space station of some kind, which I can't remember what they call it. Do they just call it Department H? Anyway, there's this organization, and it's very important. Probably the fate of mankind is at stake. Certainly the fate of this company.
Yes.
With whatever's going on and whatever they're researching in this station.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so crazy to get down there, you guys.
Yes.
How do you get down there?
I mean, you got to take a submarine, but it takes days, and it's hell.
It's like deep.
It's intense. It's at the bottom of the deepest part of the craziest ocean. So in order to get down there, you got to, like, it's physically really taxing. Nobody else is going down there is what I'm saying.
Right.
They are basically an isolated community of scientists, and somebody has murdered somebody.
Right.
Possibly. And so whatever's going on down there, like, nobody can really leave, and they don't really know how to figure it out, and there's not a lot anybody can do about it, because it's like this private station at the bottom of the ocean. There's right. no real jurisdiction down there.
There's not a sheriff? The company didn't think about that?
They did not. This was not anticipated, apparently. So the daughter of the head scientist is sent down to investigate this murder.
Right.
Guess who was murdered? The head scientist.
Good.
So she's investigating the murder of her father.
Seems like a conflict of interest.
Huge.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing. They get into the bureaucracy and, like, the monetary stuff in cool ways.
Yeah.
Well, like, there's no one else.
Yep.
And this is how it's going to be.
And not, you can't just send anybody else down there.
Yeah.
Like, these are your options.
And they convey very effortlessly, Matt Kent does, I think, the way that going this deep in the ocean is, like, you know, akin to going into, like, deep space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The environment is crazy hard. It's takes a ton of technology and time and money and effort to do this.
And make a really good case how it's like it's actually crazier and more oppressive than space in some ways to
right.
be on the bottom of the ocean. He has this really great line about, like, when you enter space, you, like, feel literally the weight of the world is, like, lifted off you. You
right.
can, like, float around and possibilities are endless. But the exact opposite of that is happening in this underwater space station, where everything is trying to crush you.
Right.
Yeah.
It was really neat. I liked it. I like Matt Kent a lot. I like his approach. He's packing a lot in because it's a first issue. But Mind Management is a masterpiece, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long-form book that came out month by month and unraveled into something really special and really cool.
It's a neat book.
So I am really excited about this, his newest take on the monthly form.
Yeah, and he does this thing in all his books where he does, like, a breakdown of the suit, the technology of the suit.
Yep.
That's, like, really cool and just enough where you're like, oh, yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a great crime scene shot in this book where it's, like, kind of all laid out. And you
yep.
get a kind of a big shot of, like, the actual underwater crime scene.
Yep.
Totally badass.
He's actually just his sense of, oh, I opened right up to it. I mean, like, this, there's just a panel at the top of one of these pages that shows the young woman, our protagonist in the story, just walking along a dock along, like, the surface level of this space station. And just, there's so much work getting done in this one panel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it establishes the size of the place. It establishes, like, her isolation. It's just laid out so well. Matt Kent, and he's doing it all by himself. He's got a very particular style.
Yep, the color palette is very deliberate.
Yep. It's really good. I think he's Canadian. I might just be saying that.
I bet he is.
Yeah. So that's Department H. Those were and are our sweet nugs for the week. So that was Batman Elseworlds. That was The Fourth Planet and Department H from Dark Horse.
Matt Kent is not Canadian.
Matt Kent, breaking news, not Canadian.
See?
He'll always be Canadian to me.
Why did I think he was? Because Jeff Lear's Canadian.
Just Lemire, yeah.
Because they're buddies.
You're right.
Maybe I made up the fact.
Also, because it's like 420, man. You're like, everybody's Canadian.
I can't
man.
Even get my fucking country straight, man. I'm so blitzed. Okay.
Did you read anything else that rocked your world this week?
So much stuff, but I'm ready to talk about
DC
Comics.
All right. Word. You're saying let's move into our taser
pew,
segment.
Pew. Look out! Pew! What was that, you guys?
That's the sound of the taser!
And we were shooting at and missing EC Comics and William Gaines.
Wait, we hit them.
I don't want to hit them. I like them both.
Well, but we have to...
We were aiming at them.
I see.
We were definitely aiming at them.
Nick, why should I give a shit about William Gaines and EC Comics?
Yeah, explain it. Explain
Dude,
yourself.
Break it down for me.
All right. Well, you sound so angry. So EC Comics, founded in 1944.
Lovely.
Was the incredibly popular publisher of post-superhero genre of comics. The biggest, I think, or one of the biggest after the superhero comics wave
yes.
of the 40s.
Right.
They were one of the biggest publishers putting out stuff in the horror, crime, military, science fiction genres.
Right.
So we're talking about Tales from the Crypt. We're talking about mm-hmm. Mad Magazine eventually, this kind of
yes.
stuff. And Bill Gaines, the son of the founder, is one of the biggest names and personalities in the whole comic book industry at the medium's height, at the golden age, at the top of where comics peaked.
Yes.
So he's quite a character. EC Comics was quite a publisher, and I think they deserve a little bit of our attention today. What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
And not only that, but there was a huge roster of talent spun out of EC.
It's actually ridiculous. EC was home to a legendary roster of artists, including Jack Davis, Al Feldstein, a guy named Johnny Craig, who, if Christian was here, he would just be giddy with joy. Mm-hmm. He loves him so much. John Severin, and a guy named Wallace Wood, also known as Wally Wood, who just dominated, and a dude named Graham Ingalls. And so many more. It's outrageous. These guys are being collected right now by Fantagraphics Books by artist. There's 15 hardcovers, each one focusing on a different EC artist, and it's just some of the coolest, best stuff. So, yeah.
Cool.
So William Gaines, also known as Bill Gaines, didn't start EC Comics.
No, not at all.
But
no,
he took it over eventually. Tell me about little Billy Gaines.
Yeah, so you can't talk about Billy Gaines without talking about his dad, Max Gaines. Mm-hmm. Max Gaines, Mr. Gaines, is considered to be one of the pioneers of the kind of modern American comic book.
Full name Maxwell?
I believe so.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And before this, we have Victorian Comics. He's the one who kind of makes the jump into the modern style of American comics, one of them. And he's the co-publisher of a company called All American Publications. And this is the comic book company that creates characters like Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Hawkman.
What?
Later taken on by DC Comics.
Oh, DC buys them, right.
When All American Publications starts to change, DC comes in. And picks them, or National Publications comes in,
right,
which would later become DC. That's super boring. But either way, these are the guys.
I thought it was fascinating.
These are the guys who come up with the general blueprint for Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Hawkman. Max Gaines leaves All American Publications, creates EC Comics, and he founds it under the idea that they can create educational comics for kids. And their big hit is called Picture Stories from the Bible.
So you're saying initially EC stood for
Educational Comics?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's correct.
And so they come out, they're coming out with these educational comics for kids. And Picture Stories from the Bible is a four-part series, and it does very, very well. Everyone's buying it.
That's where the money comes from.
That's where the money is. So then they expand it to Picture Stories from American History and Folk Tales, and it becomes a very popular company. And also, interestingly enough, Max Gaines writes one of the earliest essays on comic books. It's called Narrative Illustrations, The Story of Comics. If you find a copy of it today, you can essentially retire immediately.
Yeah,
I want to read
very
that.
Very hard to find. The one place
Did you find any like scans of it
no,
or anything?
No, the one place you can find it is you can go to Cambridge's library and rent it out.
Cool.
And stay in their thing.
I want to read that.
Yeah, dang.
It's a little pamphlet that was inserted into comic books and sent out with them. And it's kind of just an argument for why comics
are
important.
What a great name. I've never heard the term narrative illustration before.
That's actually pretty dope.
That
it's
is
really good.
Really on point.
Yeah.
That's much better than graphic novel.
And that comes
Ooh.
Out... Oh, do we change everything? And
we now have narrative illustration sections at the store.
Oh, let's table this. Yeah. But I think we might be Max Gaines from beyond the grave.
I know,
just changing
and
the game.
This happens in 1942, so this is pretty early in the comic game. But what ends up happening is Max Gaines dies in a very tragic speedboat accident in New York.
His speedboat smashed into another speedboat.
Well, the two speedboats connected in some way. And he dies with a friend of his.
I'm not laughing. I mean, it's just a speedboat death.
It's just a badass way to go.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And this leaves EC Comics to William Gaines, and he's 25 years old.
Wow.
Gaines has just gotten out. All he wanted to do as a kid was join the military.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone rejects him.
Yeah.
So he goes to the draft board and is like, draft me, please. And ends up becoming a KP, a kitchen duty person.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really fulfill his destiny in the military. Right when he gets out, his dad dies in this
sort of like scrawny Steve Rogers.
Yeah,
he can't get in.
Similar.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
His dad dies in this tragic boating accident, and thus Max Gaines is given the company at 25.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And then we make the shift, right?
Right, Will Gaines makes a pretty drastic shift, from this kind of educational comic focus to the horror, science fiction, and war tales.
We have a name change as well.
Correct.
Entertaining Comics.
Correct.
That's right.
But continues to publish the educational comics, and that becomes very important later in the story.
So in the 1940s, we are in peak fucking comic books.
Yes.
There's no way
around it. That's actually what it's called. Some people call it the golden age.
I call it peak fucking comic books.
Yes.
So this is the pinnacle of the gold. This is the goldenest part of the golden age.
Boing.
So Gaines later, he testifies. Did you read, Marcus?
I read the whole thing.
The congressional hearing thing?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was super interesting. We're going to definitely post that in the show notes.
Yeah.
This was Will Gaines' testimony before the hearing, Senate hearing on juvenile delinquency. It's a quick read. If you have time, check it out, the listener.
You'll be able to buy it, too, a reprint of this actual thing next month in the comic store.
Here goes Curtis,
so
just shilling.
Hey, here we go. We buy it at any Vault of Midnight, $28.99.
So he testifies in those hearings that he's getting like guaranteed bankable sales of 1.5 million copies a month across like 10 titles.
That is bonkers.
That's guaranteed. And that's with returnability, right? So that's as if every comic he sold was as popular as the number one most popular comic book that sells today, month by month,
mm-hmm.
plus 50,000.
Ridiculous.
But all of his books sell that well, not just one of them.
That's crazy.
Just think about that and how fucking crazy that is.
Yep.
Comics were just a totally different animal at this point in history. So superheroes have also peaked, and they're on the wane at this point. They're actually entering into a period of unpopularity. And this is after the advent of some of the most enduring superheroes in history, your Wonder Woman, your Green Lanterns, your Supermans, like your Batmans. They're all coming out at the same time. And at this point, the clock be damned. I got a question for you guys that I can't stop thinking about.
Yeah.
So if you could just take your love for the characters and set that aside for a second and take your rose-colored glasses off for a second, if you can,
mm-hmm.
don't you think it's weird that we are still writing stories for characters that were created 80 years ago?
Absolutely.
Isn't that a little weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really struck me in doing the research for this stuff that, like, these characters were made up by people, like, with dollar signs in their eyes, and we have attached all of this, like, mythic import to these characters that we love, and I do love them. But they were made up by 20-year-olds who are just like, I don't fucking know. He's a Batman. He's
right?
a man bat.
Yeah.
I don't give a
shit.
He's
got a bat car.
There's
going to
be four other
house.
Stories in that one. Maybe one of us will make us any money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the bigger thing is like when you still look at the superhero lineup, the amount of new superheroes who have stuck and gotten their own titles
is
nothing compared to all these characters from the 40s and 50s.
That's right.
Who are still the bread and butter of the comic industry.
And that's not to say that we're not getting like a ton of amazing new shit
all
of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it struck me as so strange that we are still squeezing drops out of characters that were made by folks that were not super invested in like, the integrity of these characters almost a fucking century ago.
Yeah, it's insane.
That gets to, you know, we talk about this a lot, but the rules, no rules sort of a thing. You know, when you have constraints, a talented person, they're working on Batman, you know, just talking about Elseworlds again, you can do weird stuff. So I like a world where you can do new stuff and do whatever you want, but there is something to be said. We're still reading. I'm still reading. I know you guys are too. Cool. Somehow. Interesting, cool Spider-Man stories.
Absolutely.
Batman stories. Somehow, 75 years later. And it's because of these weird constraints, maybe, to a degree. You know?
And it's just is something weird about this medium where, like, they just decided at one point, they're like, all right, these are our guys.
Yeah.
This is what we're going with. There's always going to be a Spider-Man book.
Right.
There's always going to be a Batman book.
And is that because of the fan reaction? What is it?
Yeah. What is it?
Yeah, is it the three people who run these companies for, like, 60 years just... It'll always be Spider-Man because
exactly.
I love him.
And now we're locked in.
Yeah. Totally.
And I don't know that I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It just struck me as
Is it mythology at this point?
Yeah.
Maybe
right,
it is.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing me to digress on
Great
that.
Great question,
YouTube.
Man.
So regardless, reader interest in the late 40s, it's starting to shift towards other genres of stuff. Superheroes are taking a downward. From their historic peak, they're mm-hmm. never going to be the same as what they were there. And other genres are now, what's up? It's Westerns, it's war comics, it's science fiction, romance. But most importantly, the most popular ones are crime and horror, and this is
nice.
Where entertaining comics and Bill Gaines fucking eat and sleep.
They do indeed. Some of the notable titles from EC Comics right now are Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, Shock Suspense Stories, one word,
mm-hmm.
that's good stuff, Haunt of Fear, Marcus's favorite, Two-Fisted Tales,
love it,
and Frontline Combat. So, yeah, they're right there at the moment hitting with these books that they've already been doing. So it's a combination of what people want and what they were kind of already rocking. Some of the common themes to these books. They were all genre books, mm-hmm. but science fiction and horror. But I also love, they have a book called Science Fantasy that I thought is super hilarious. It combines two wonderful genres. Is science a genre? I don't know. I love the fact that the perpetrators of a lot of these books often eat their own shit.
Those are the big themes of those books.
Yeah.
Is there's always that O. Henry twist at mm-hmm. the end where the whatever they feared most or whatever their... It always twisted in the end in such a way that, like, usually the protagonist was revealed to be the bad guy or got his comeuppance in some way.
In the way that he did it. Right. Yeah. There's a story about a taxidermist who gets stuffed. You know, he's an evil taxidermist. Just, you know, stuff like this. Super, super funny.
So Gaines was a really interesting dude. So there's a lot of anecdotes and, like, weird stuff about, like, him as a businessman. Like, for instance, he struck out, there's this standard clause in all contracts that's, like, stating that parties will find reasonable ends to dispute. And he could just, he would always cross that out of every contract. Say, I can never promise to be reasonable in a dispute.
Oh, lovely.
So just
but
like
he would be upfront about it.
He would be very upfront about it.
Nice.
So he dropped all advertising from Mad Magazine, giving up a lot of money in the process for reasons that we're going to talk about later. It's super interesting. He wouldn't do any merchandising for Mad, he limited it severely at the expense of a lot of money because he didn't want to alienate people with, like, shoddy products.
Mm.
So this is really interesting. National Lampoon is an actual humor magazine that spun out of Harvard Lampoon.
I remember
And National Lampoon in its heyday was, you know, National Lampoon's Animal House, right?
Sure.
And a series of National Lampoon's Family Vacation or
Great
Movie. Vacation and really good movies. And some of the biggest comedy writers in film and TV come out of National Lampoon, like Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
So National Lampoon comes out with Animal House, and immediately they're like, we got to do a Mad movie. This is not William Gaines' idea. This is like everybody else with
Hollywood
money
or
is
whatever.
Like, yeah, you got to make a Mad movie right now. And the result is Up the Academy, and this is a movie that no one likes.
I've never heard of it.
I watched it.
Tell me more.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It is... Oh boy! So it's about a bunch of. We don't have time to get into the whole thing. I put a link to the trailer that I think everybody should watch. But it's about basically a military academy and the kids that are at this. It's like weirdly offensive and not funny. It's like all of that stuff about those movies from that period that you like that somehow threaded a line that was like super offensive and weird, and you can't believe they made it, but it was funny. This is like all of that stuff, but not funny.
Bummer.
So Gaines pays $30,000 in the 70s to have all association with Mad Magazine removed from the marketing and promotion of this film.
Wow.
And Ron Liebman, who has one of the starring roles in the movie, also pays to have his name removed.
Pays
from
money.
It. Yeah, exactly. And Gaines would write handwritten apologies and offer refunds to fans that wrote in to complain
that
about
is
the movie.
Freaking outrageous.
He was notoriously cheap, but he also appreciated the appearance of being
cheap.
So, for instance, like, he once paid double for low-supply pulp paper so that rather than upgrading to cheaper, nicer-looking paper because he wanted the magazine to look cheap.
He doesn't want
to
put on airs.
And he refused an editor's request for a $3 a week raise, and then he took him out to this, like, a dinner at the most expensive place in New York City. And the guy was like, hey, that was as much as a year's worth of my raise.
Yeah.
And William Gaines is like, well, I enjoy good conversation and good food. I don't enjoy giving raises.
That's crazy.
Boing. I love that. I love specific shit like that about people.
So we have talked in depth before about Frederick Wortham and the congressional hearings.
Yes. And we
don't have to relitigate all of it.
No, and I don't plan to. If you want to learn more about this, in the episode entitled A Tiny Sexy Lasso, which aired on March 17th, we really get into this deep. But we're going to post the Gaines' full testimony, and that's really what you should check out if this interests you at all. But I found it really interesting. So Gaines starts off talking about how, like, they're still publishing all this educational material and how much it does in sales.
Yeah.
And kind of pointing that, like, hey, yeah, we do this horror stuff, but also we've been publishing really great educational material for a very long time. It's really interesting. He kind of gets into the value of the comic book and brings up a lot of really interesting points about why this subcommittee is essentially full of shit. But it doesn't go the way he wants. He gets grilled pretty hard at the end of the testimony. And they bring up, so the people who are grilling him do bring up some interesting points, but this is just a fascinating moment in Gaines's life. And I highly encourage everyone, if you want to try to get to know the man who is responsible for kind of a lot of these pulp comics, read this testimony. It takes about 15 minutes, and it will give you such a great inside view about what is happening in the country at this time and
really,
the view of comic books.
It was interesting, too, because his whole thing was like freedom of speech.
Yep.
And you know who hates freedom of speech? Commies.
Yep.
And that's kind of like how he frames it. Like,
sure,
you can't see you can see bad things in the newspaper every day about crime in the United States.
Yeah.
Like, he just pulled up and like, here's today's newspaper. Here's all this stuff. You know where you can't find out about crime that's happening in your neighborhood? Communist Russia.
Right.
Communist China. It is
right.
Like, that was the crux of like his argument.
What a badass.
Yeah.
He kills it. But
he does until they start questioning him. And then it kind of all starts to fall apart a little
bit.
Because you realize that he is actually just trying to move as much product as he can.
Absolutely.
He doesn't give a shit about kids. He doesn't give a shit about free speech. He tests his books on kids insofar as to see like what will sell.
Right. Not what will influence. Really interesting, though, and it'll be posted in the show notes. I highly encourage everyone to read it.
But
nice.
There were big consequences from the result of these hearings. So there were the CCA really comes into full force here.
They sure do.
So it was... Gaines actually called the meeting. Curtis, talk to us about the CCA a little
so,
bit.
So, yeah, in 1954, after all this kind of outcry and these hearings, Gaines calls a meeting with all the fellow publishers, and they suggest that they do a comic industry. They call it the Magazine Association of America, and they start this thing called the Comics Code Authority.
Mm-hmm.
The rules of this new code are crazy pants. We've talked about them. In the Tiny Sexy Lasso episode.
Mm-hmm.
We'll link to that. Give it a listen. It's also available online. But you can have no words like horror or terror or weird on the cover of your comic book.
So Gaines was not expecting this.
No.
Not at all.
If the organization that he started, because if they don't police themselves, they figure some outside organization is going to do it.
Exactly.
But it totally backfires on Gaines, and it effectively ruins EC Comics.
Yeah, the comic code is strictly enforced. Distributors refuse to carry anything without this stamp, and Gaines refuses to join this organization that he essentially helped create.
Yeah.
He renamed some books. He canceled all these titles that had these bad words in them, and all of a sudden we have the new direction, and essentially this is the death of EC Comics as you know it.
And the new direction was his attempt to try and do books that conformed with the code.
Yeah,
it just didn't work.
But they went in a totally new direction.
Exactly.
And these books were MD and Psychoanalysis.
Yeah, and a few others.
A few others.
The names of which I can't remember, but yeah. There was a great little tidbit in here about a story called Judgment Day.
Yes.
What did you find out about this?
Oh, so this is super cool. So the really cool part about this is this story, Judgment Day, was first published in Weird Fantasy number 18 in 1953, before there's a comics code.
Yes.
So it existed, it was out in the world as it was. Then they're going to reprint it again in Incredible Science Fiction number 33 in the year of 1996, or excuse me, in the year of 1956, but there is a comics code.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an all-robot planet called Cybrinthia.
Okay.
And it's being considered for inclusion into this Galactic Republic. The robots are divided into two colors.
Yeah.
And
they're identical in every other way.
Exactly. And it's revealed they go to these assembly lines where they're built, and everything's the same. Their parts, everything on the inside is exactly the same, except when they put the final plating on, one is orange and one is blue.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an allegory for, you know, America and racism.
Possibly.
Yes.
And some of the orange and blue robots are treated differently. Some of the one
they're educated differently.
They have different responsibilities and rights. And,
yep. So due to the blatant robotism on the planet, it is deemed unworthy for inclusion
by this astronaut who's visiting them and inspecting them to see if they can be included. Right.
Yep. The judge, this guy Charles Murphy, who was the Comics Code administrator, objected to this story because the final reveal was that this astronaut was a black man, and they demanded that it be removed.
Judge Charles Murphy was like, the protagonist of this comic cannot be a black dude.
Yep.
That violates the CCA code.
Yep.
It actually did not violate the CCA
code.
but it's an example of what's going on. This, they are essentially trying to destroy EC Comics.
Yeah. Correct.
The code has like a vested interest in like trying to put this company out of business.
Yep.
And so not only is Charles Murphy, Judge Charles Murphy, a dick.
Yeah.
But for even, you know, for the making an objection on that basis,
yeah.
But it's also housed in, like, directly trying to put EC out of business.
Absolutely. And the story goes that Gaines and Feldstein called this judge on the phone, and it ended with a hearty fuck you in unison. And this is backed up in a few different accounts of this story. And they went ahead and published the story in its original form without editing it.
Yeah.
So, yep.
But that was pretty much the end of EC Comics. They lost distributor support en masse. People stopped carrying their books. And that was pretty much it. And he's also, Gaines becomes kind of like the face of the evil side of comics. So he's hugely unpopular nationally as a person, as a just, you know, personally. He is loaded with a ton of debt because all of these distributors have abandoned him.
Yeah. Mm.
And he basically bunkers down around Mad, which is kind of the last vestige comic, and he changes it to magazine format in order to get around the restrictions of the CCA.
Right.
And everything just becomes about Mad. That's that. There, he has no other publications.
Mad magazine.
He actually sinks a ton of his own money into the flagging business in order to keep Mad. Like, he invests huge amounts of what's left of his money just to keep things going long enough.
Cool.
So let's talk for a minute about Mad Magazine.
It's so dope.
It's so cool. So Mad was, it was cool for a lot of reasons. It was really awareness. It was really self-aware. It saw itself as trash.
Mm.
It, the things that it made fun of, it saw them. It pointed out how superficial they all were and how they were also trash. It saw itself as a money-making vehicle, and it had this image of being like the enemy of parents and teachers, and it just fucking leaned way into it.
It totally did.
There wasn't any other magazine or comic doing the same thing at that time. There's no other game in town when it was first released. So there's a lot of like post-war and Cold War jingoism, and people are really feeling patriotic and feeling like, you know, we got to stop the commies. And Mad was pretty much the only outlet for young people that are like, man, this is bullshit.
Right.
Or just wanted to be subversive in some way. There's just not a lot of humor outlets by smart people.
Right.
Everything I read about Mad Magazine is just like, everything that you think is funny is because of people that read Mad Magazine when they were a kid.
It's hugely influential.
There's no Simpsons without Mad Magazine. There's no, I mean, it's like every type of comedy. You just can't escape how big it was for comedy for the entire world.
Yeah, did you guys? I read Mad a lot when I was a kid. It was like
tons.
The one thing my dad would buy me when my mom wasn't at the grocery store.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was the best thing.
It was super gnarly, and there was absolutely nothing else like it. It was so mature and so well done, despite all the zit jokes and the you know, the weird. You know, it was very topical also. Is it political? Is very of its time, whatever was happening in the news.
And they would make fun of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, movies, books, newscasters.
Across political spectrums, like, they, you know, from the left and the right, they just, everybody got made fun of.
And it was always just like a little naughty. Like the folding pictures on the back.
I'm saying
know,
it was,
did,
it had some naughty. Yeah.
It was good. But the really interesting thing about Mad is the history of the kind of their main frontline character.
Before we get there.
Okay.
So Art Spiegelman summed it up better than anybody else that I read about. And he said, the message that Mad had in general was, the media is lying to you and we are part of the media. So think for yourself. And
good on you.
I just can't think of a better way to like sum up what they were going for and the effect that they had other than that.
Man, Art Spiegelman is such a G.
Art Spiegelman's so cool.
Dang, dude.
That's the creator of Mouse.
Of Mouse.
The illustrated narrative.
What else did he do? He did Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wait, what did he do? Garbage Pail? No, he didn't do Garbage Pail Kids. He did Wacky Packages.
Wacky Packages. There you go. And as far as Mad Magazine was ad-free because they decided, his quote is, we long ago decided we couldn't take money from Pepsi-Cola and make fun of Coca-Cola.
Mm.
So if you can't make fun of corporate America if you're taking their money at the same time. So as irreverent and weird and quirky as that dude was, there was this integrity and philosophy underlying what he did that is really, really interesting.
Yeah, he's a complicated dude because he, you know, all this stuff is happening. He's a shill and he just wants to sell comics. But then he sinks his own money back into Mad Magazine and won't do ads. And
notoriously cheap. But he would take his entire staff on these huge trips around the world and he did it every single year. And he was just a really interesting dude.
Yeah.
I got to imagine that Mad made money for him. I mean, it would seem to have some pretty big circulation.
It did. It peaked in the mid-70s.
Really?
And it went down, just like with a lot of the humor magazines.
But at like a couple million copies, right, an issue in the mid-70s,
it was.
Right?
At its peak, it was a couple million an issue.
Still
awesome. 74, I think.
DC bought Mad, correct?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we still sell out of Mad Magazine at
every
the
time.
Comic Shack. Every single
issue.
We have no back issues of Mad Magazine. No matter how many we order, it's always gone.
Yep.
Which is pretty incredible.
It really is.
Yep.
And you might have noticed that on the cover of every Mad Magazine, there's a dude. His name is Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah.
He's such a weirdo.
We don't even have time to talk about how crazy the creation of Alfred E. Newman is.
But could you do it in 30 seconds?
How about this? How about in 30 seconds, I'm just going to tell you all of that I know about Alfred E. Newman before he got to Mad.
Do it.
Okay.
Should we do it?
Yeah. Give me one sec to get a timer going here. And go.
Alfred E. Newman's origins are shrouded in intrigue and mystery. The earliest image anyone can find was in an advertisement for Atmore's Mincemeat, Genuine Plum Pudding, in 1895.
Wow.
But maybe, actually, it was an advertisement for the play The New Boy in 1884, where he had this caption underneath that said, "What's the good of anything? Nothing!" And it was later used in advertising for Painless Dentistry and possibly was the influence for the very popular news strip The Yellow Kid.
Wow.
Versions of Newman's face were used in medical pictures demonstrating hormone imbalances and deficiency disease.
Hilarious.
And it appeared as nose art on an American World War II bomber with the caption, "Me worry?" It was frequently used as negative political advertising by showing Newman's face saying something like, "Sure, I'm for Roosevelt." Like, this idiot's voting for Roosevelt. And the name Alfred E. Newman was taken from a popular music composer, Alfred Newman, who composed the 20th Century Fox opening film music.
Oh.
Oh,
it's exactly it. Nice work.
I gave you more time than 30 seconds because it was so interesting, but under a minute, 55 seconds.
We didn't even get to like what happened when Mad got a hold of it.
Man,
it's so crazy.
All I'm saying is when they do the cover of whoever and then Alfred E. Newman and they both look exactly the same, it's like he has the every face.
Yeah.
He has the most distinct face that you could see from like 100 miles away. But then when they make, you know, Donald Trump look like Alfred E. Newman,
mm-hmm.
they're like twins.
Yeah.
And it works. Back.
Well, all right, that's all we know about Will Gaines and EC Comics.
Interesting shit.
I think it's interesting shit.
Those comics are still so effing good, you dudes.
I picked up a Frontline Combat because they reprint them.
I'm saying.
And dove into it, and it was a blast.
I had so much fun talking about EC Comics that we forgot to do our board game review.
Whoops.
You guys.
Whoops.
Tune in next week.
Can we save it for next week?
Absolutely.
Can I give a really quick update that I played Burgle Brothers again?
Oh.
And our review of it was maybe a little tepid, but I played it again, and
okay.
I really, really liked it.
Oh, cool.
We were doing a couple things wrong in the rules, and it was really tense and really, really cool.
Dope.
Burgle Brothers. So I wholeheartedly endorse that game now.
Nice.
Cool.
That is going to do it today. Our producer and editor is Rachel Polk. Our music was created by A-Bomb. All of our art and designs created by Philip Wong. Special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for the use of their recording studio.
And please subscribe, download, and review the Super Skull Show on iTunes.
You can check us out on the internet. We're all over it. Super Skull Show is how you find us.
Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and podcasts and stuff and nugs since 1996. My name is Nick Weibar.
I'm Marcus Schwarmer.
And I'm Kurt Thulu Sullivan.
And I wish you good reading until next week on behalf of everyone. Rufus Teague. Rufus Teague.
That's not a bad barbecue sauce. It's not great, but
it's okay.
Pretty good.
It's very serviceable. Very serviceable.
You need some barbecue sauce? It'll do. Not my first choice, but I'll take it.